the next session is with Amy from Nominec, and Amy's going to be talking about the DNS fund, which is currently in its pilot. Over to you.
Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. It's so nice to meet you all. And I want to thank the DevRoom facilitators for bringing everyone together. I hear that last year it was in a much smaller room, so we're going up in the world. We've got a bigger room this year. So I'm here today to talk to you a bit about the Nominec DNS Fund. It's very much got my learning hat on, coming to you with humility, because I really want to hear from you about what you think and how we can improve, because we're very, very early days. So forgive our bumps and mistakes, but that's what we're here for, right? Is to learn and improve and say what we haven't got right. So I work for Nominec. We run the .uk registry and a number of other TLDs, top-level domains. And as part of that, we are a public benefit company. So it's part of our articles of association that we can't make profit in a traditional way. And that means that we give a lot of our excess from selling domains to public benefit causes. Now, traditionally, my role has looked at things like digital skills, online safety, but we've been really trying to listen to our community. And this year, last year, 2025, for the first time, we were really delighted to enter a new space and start funding open source DNS projects. So as I say, it's relatively new for us. But it's quite interesting to then think about, you know, how that's come about and what our personal incentives are as well. So where did we start with all of this? Well, it tracks back to even before I had my child, who turned 3 last week. And we did some research in 2022 with this amazing organization called Demos. They're an awesome think tank in the UK. And they set out to help us craft the question, what is it that we're trying to influence? What is it that we're trying to do? And it's really, what should Nominec focus our investment on to support the technology ecosystem that underpins internet infrastructure? And once we've got a handle over that question and we've got a bit of focus, what funding model should we use? So we set out and asked this question of, you can tell a little bit of who ended up having a say in this. Our staff and our members, and overwhelmingly those people were saying, look, don't try and do lots of the shiny things, don't do lots of new and innovative things, look at what's existing, look at the maintenance of what is out there. The other thing that they said, and this graph isn't stacked because you could answer multiple to this question, you can really see overwhelmingly our members in particular, so those are people that work with us that buy domains and resell domains in their own work. They said work with open source communities. And you can see a couple of quotes up there. The investing profits in open source with a focus on human rights. Seriously, nothing else. We also did a massive landscape map. So we sought to really understand other funders, government actors, who in the DNS was operating. What sort of projects we might expect to go out there, identifying different actors and players, and where we might have a role and where we might have a niche. And I just absolutely love this quote, which comes from an expert advisor, on how when we look at who is maintaining and who's paid to maintain open source, often when that's at the behest of profit, the motivations are going to steer them towards those profit-driven motivations. So, you know, I think it's really powerful to think about those motivations and think where there might be pots of funding or actors that could be looking at it with a different lens. And where did that research kind of lead us? What were the main findings? And I'd love to hear, actually I'm going to ask you, whether you think these are right or whether you think there's more to it. But this is from all of this mapping, lots of interviews with staff members and those in the open source community about the pre-existing funding in open source. So the first one being that the majority of funding stems from corporates, not foundations, and that can bias development. Second being single source funding, so you get one funder wants to just take credit for one project as opposed to pooling funds, and something that Nick Gates was talking about earlier with joining up lots of funds. And thirdly, funding not being available for individuals, only projects. Does that sound familiar? People nodding? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, do shout out and I can repeat what you say if you think of anything else. But this is what it found. And I think it's interesting because we identified these problems, but I'm not going to say that automatically we were able to resolve them, right? Because we weren't. We've made mistakes. We've got problems, and we've got challenges to reaching these. So, the second problem here in particular about having one funder, one project. We have tried to reach out to other funders and combine and work, but it's not always easy. And sometimes when you do work for an organisation like mine, they do want to have their name associated with it so that they can sort of celebrate and say what they're doing. This third problem in particular has been a real challenge for us, and I'm just going to share a little anecdote about taking this finding back into our organisation. So as you can imagine, we had to set up lots of conversations with our lawyers, with our financial controllers, to think about what it looks like to actually fund not just well-established large organisations, but some of those smaller individuals that are just the unsung heroes of keeping the internet as we know it alive. And it was really hard because actually, you know, for financial tax audit reasons, they were saying to me, well, no, actually, you've got to be a registered entity, you've got to have a name, you've got to have an address, which you can't just fund Joe Blog off the streets. But I went through this process, and actually there are two in our portfolio that are individual maintainers and don't have an organisation. We've been supporting them to register, and actually my financial controller said to me, look, Amy, look at your portfolio of the people you're funding. Actually, you've got to make sure you get that balance right. You've got to make sure that this is about funding those maintainers and those individuals. So it really was a case of going back to the principles of what we were doing, who we're setting out to fund, and relying on this research to make sure that we were responding to that need. So where did we end up? What did we do last year? Now, I feel a little bit embarrassed, honestly, to share the amount of money here. It's 370k in pounds, which is about 430,000 euros. So it really isn't a lot of money that we're talking about here. But we're seeing this as somewhat of a pilot. We want to see how it lands amongst you, the community, with our members, with our stakeholders, what the perceptions are of a fund like this. And certainly, we're hoping to at least double this in the next year. One of the big things coming out of the research was longevity of funds. So I would love to imagine being able to award three-year funding, which we've been able to do with previous grants in our Countering Online Harms portfolio. But at the moment, we've just been giving these one-off fundings. But that, if that's, you know, strong feedback, that is about relying on that fund moving forward, then I think that is something important for us to make the case to our board to get 3 years' worth of sign-off, not just one. And really, we landed on something that felt right in terms of the fund itself and what we were setting out to achieve. So it's all about funding and improving the security, sustainability, and resilience of DNS open source projects. And that's been really critical because when we looked at all the applications, it was something we did come back to. Had to be open source and had to be in the development of DNS, not just using DNS. And that's helped us stay really true and transparent to what we set out and our objectives. And so how did we do this? Well, firstly, yes, of course, we have some expertise, but we have our own biases as Nominet. We have our own preferences of different platforms. We have our own technical experts. So while the panel that we formed was designed to make sure we were really listening to the experts that had a better horizon scan and a map of the community, we made sure that we were bringing in our knowledge, but also really listening externally. So you can recognize two of these amazing panelists who are sat in the front row over here. So we've got Kaylin and Mirko, who really were fantastic in just bringing your knowledge and steering us in the right way, not just in who we selected, but also in how we set up the fund to try to realize what it means to be transparent and how we could really understand what's needed. I think something I'm very conscious of is this uncomfortable realization of power, who has power, who makes decisions, how those decisions get made. So one mitigating step you can do, I think, is to build an advisory panel like this. And we took a lot of learning from the Sovereign Tech Agency from that perspective as well. We also tried to be really principles focused, so be transparent in what we were looking for, what questions we'd be asking, how we would be making those selections, and sharing those out there. So actually, I'm going to pause for a moment and invite you to have a little read. So we've got 5 main criteria about public benefit. It's about securing critical infrastructure and what impact that would have on society if it broke down. The need that it represents in terms of resilient operation of the global DNS. We were really looking for proven use. This is really important to us, that we weren't setting out to fund shiny new infrastructure. It was actually about things that maintainers that are already doing the work, that are already underfunded, that are already in the ecosystem and have a proven reputation. So we wanted to see that in what we were selecting. And indeed, the right people. Are those people the people that have the skills, experience, and understanding? And in fact, some teams we looked at were, some applications we looked at weren't part of teams, they were individuals. So that's quite interesting too, is you could be the best individual in the world, but if that project isn't necessarily sustainable, you don't have lots of contributors, you haven't thought of that. That's something in the system that we're looking at too, in terms of sustainability and value. So I'd just like you to turn to the person next to you, if you're next to someone, or if you don't want to, you could just think about it in your own time. But just tell, like, have a little chat, just a couple of minutes. Do you feel like these are right for our first round in terms of principles? Have we got it right? Is there something that you would add to that or do differently? And then if anyone's willing to give me a little bit of feedback, we're really, really keen to learn. So I'm just going to give you a couple of minutes just to turn to the person next to you. How am I for time?
10, 15 minutes or so.
Perfect. Yeah. Including questions. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Cool. Okay. Cool. 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 Okay, thank you so much. I've got my listening hat on. I keep being really tempted to step. I have to stand between these bits, so I'm not allowed to move out to you. But I've got my pen and paper ready, and I'm really keen to learn. So has anyone got any feedback? Do these feel right? Is there anything you would add? If you were in my shoes, would you do differently? Can we use the mic? Is that okay? There's a guy up the front, at the back there.
Thanks. All of these make sense. The only one I would maybe tweak would be the point number 3, proven use. Because actually, since you're providing grants, and you have people that have identified a problem. Maybe that problem has not been solved yet. So actually, it might be the case that there are no current solution to that problem. It would be risky for you to fund them, obviously, because they have not yet demonstrated a proven solution. But it sometimes makes sense to take that risk if the identified need on point two is really serious in your eyes, if you see what I mean.
That's really helpful feedback. Thank you. Anyone else? Oh, there's a at the side over here. Hi, welcome. Don't worry, just come in. We're just discussing, these are the principles that we've set up as part of our DNS fund. It was our pilot round, but I'm really keen to learn. So I'm just getting a bit of feedback from people about whether it feels right. Thank you.
Hi, thank you for this particular session. It's rare that we get an opportunity to talk to the people next to us. Ruth raised a very important concern about the third one. Is this project successful and is it being used at scale? And she talked a bit about how sometimes it's successful, but what's the definition of success and what is scale? What does that look like? It might be successful, but not at scale yet. They could be mutually exclusive. And that really resonated with me because I was looking at the fourth point, the second part where it says, do they have a track record of getting similar things done? So speaking from personal experience, I run a project where we're trying to get more research coming out of Africa by offering an open source curriculum to teach research in Africa. That's impact, that's high need, but we're not at scale, or as he mentioned, we haven't solved the problem yet, but we don't look fundable yet. This is the core idea behind my talk tomorrow about how impact is usually needed for funding, but to get impact, you do need the funding, so it's a crazy paradox. It's interesting to hear others share that as well.
I totally hear that. Thank you so much for your feedback. It's really helpful. We've got Kaylin at the front here. It's for the live stream as well.
Thank you. So I'm Kaylin with Hanno and Mirko. So Mirko and I are on the expert advisory panel, and we're discussing about how the first one, well, others too, but in particular the first one, it can be a bit subjective when you're assessing it. And we, you know, when we were assessing applications, and Mirko made the important point that like it's hard to eliminate the subjectivity, and the most important thing is that you just report, you're transparent about that, and you report it transparently. And I think we did that quite well, and you and the team were very, you know, intentional about doing that well. But yeah, so basically, Mirko's point is, to sum up, you can't eliminate subjectivity in some of the assessment criteria. Yeah.
Yeah, I really agree, and I think it is about just then being transparent about that. So we haven't announced the successful applicants yet, but it really is our intent to tie the storytelling to these principles of why those have been successful. But I think you're right that there are areas of subjectivity that we need to be just open and honest about in what our advisory panel are sharing with us, and then ultimately we're making that judgment. We've got one more bit of feedback here.
I think it's worth considering a spectrum of risk in projects. Yep. Like not everything should be safe, and yep, not everything should be super risky. So there's always the possibility the next innovation, a greenfield idea, may come through something like this. But if a fund like this doesn't take a spectrum of risk into account, then those things won't get funded, and we'll just be sort of where we are now. So I agree with the idea that funding shiny new things is not great, because there's a lot of stuff out there that exists and we depend on now that needs the funding. But I think the risk spectrum is possibly a factor to add.
Thank you. Yeah, I love that idea of adding in more of a spectrum so we can understand that. Yeah, and I mean, your point on innovation is very fair, and it is something that the research came up with three potential models for us to look at, and one of them was just an innovation fund. We could look out for the next big thing that's going to radically shake up DNS, and we could fund that and put big money into it. But actually, we settled on, let's start small and just look at what's happening at the moment, where there's existing work, and as we iterate and evolve, I could see potentially parts of that changing and shifting. So look, I've got three pages of mini notes. I'm going to take those back. We will be launching our round two in the coming months, so watch this space. And you know, it's my full intent that your feedback will help us shape the learning of how that comes across. So where did we get to? You saw that the fund was live in September. We made advisory panel. We had advisory panel meetings in November. We've been busy working with the eight successful applicants that we've committed to fund on their contracting. These aren't those. These are just a sample of the types of things that we got coming in around DNS path transparency, DNS resolvers, looking at tracking to reduce maintenance and admin issues. We got lots of ideas about libraries, DNS client and server libraries, test beds, testing environments, lots of things about monitoring availability and performance of DNS servers, and monitoring DNS traffic as well. So it was brilliant. It was quite an international spread in those. I expected 20 applicants, honestly, and we got 33. So I think that was really, really good. And we're really delighted with the kind of feedback and reception that we've had. So, yeah, I'm sorry not to have the slide that then says, and here are the people we're funding, but we just have to make sure that we're doing all our proper checks, and it will be sort of live soon, so watch this space. There is a space on our website where you can sign up for updates and for more. But otherwise, look, I'm really receptive to any general questions that you have. We've got about 10 minutes left. You could tell me some of the things, I mean, you already have started to, but if you've got things that you think, as a funder, I should stop doing, what we should stop designing in, really, really all ears. But otherwise, if you've got any questions, be really delighted to hear anything that you've got. Thank you. There's a question in the middle here.
Hi, super interesting talk. You mentioned earlier one challenge you had was with contracting and engaging people or having them set up. I was curious, did you look into some like funding intermediaries, things like GitHub sponsors or Open Collective or things like that to not have this direct connection between, let's say, or direct contract connection between your entity and the receiving parties? Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about that, because I think it's definitely pointing to we need some kind of intermediary, because at the moment we've had these two individuals as part of the eight. One of them successfully quickly rallied and set up a company and got all the like accounting and legal stuff, and actually they've got a huge number of contributors, so it was something that was going to happen anyway for that person. But the other person is just like, look, I do this in my free time. I'm not interested in setting up a company. It's too much admin for me. I don't earn enough on this to pay tax. We've said to them, you know, what can we do to pay a little bit more to help you with the setting up of that? And it's just really, really problematic, because my company's saying we can't just pay anyone. So if there is something like GitHub sponsors that we could do an intermediary, that would be game-changing for this fund. And I think that we could really open it up, because in one of our, you know, even though the research told us fund individuals, on our first eligibility it says you have to be an organisation, right? And that's just that's something we've got wrong, and we're trying to make it right. But if there's I'd love to connect with you and hear how that could work. Yeah.
So actually, my comment is along the same lines, or question is along the same lines. We talk a lot about funding, but we don't talk a lot about operationally managing that funding when it's received, and this is a perfect example of an individual that really doesn't want to deal with any of the operational concerns of receiving money. So if I'd like to suggest that it might be possible for your company to actually set up like a research institute that can just employ the people at some level and take care of all the operational complexity, because at the end of the day, you really don't want developers doing this. They don't want to do it. It will cost them, and they will get it wrong, and it is actually kind of counter to the way that we do open source, which is essentially sharing the work. And if one entity can get set up and basically do the work of all that work for a bunch of people, it actually enables a lot of contribution without a lot of overhead for them.
That's a really good idea, yeah. One idea we had was, and we're still exploring, is like a DNS academy, because the people interested in DNS is declining. But we know that there's still a lot of work to be done, and the diversity in DNS leaves a lot to be desired. So I think potentially something that could pair that into a workflow of saying you could then be employed to do this work independently, I think would be a fabulous idea. So let me bring it back to my board and see what they say. Okay, I think we're very close to the end, but I'm really happy to hear any further feedback, and there's my email. You can find me on LinkedIn and things like that. So thank you so much, everyone, for your contributions and for making this really interactive and giving me some things to go back with. So appreciate your time, and have a good rest of your afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
Thanks.